Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bob Thune. Usually I'm joined on this podcast by a bunch of friends, but everyone is scattered in this season. Pastor Dusty White is on sabbatical, Chris Hemmelman is on vacation, and Mike Kresnick and Bethany and myself are in the midst of upheaval as our church moves from one temporary building to a permanent building of our own, which is really fun, but it also means that most of our equipment is in boxes as we make a move and sort things out. And so I'm going to do something special for the next couple episodes of the Wednesday Conversation. I want to introduce you to another podcast that I'm involved with that has more specifically to do with church planting. It's the Acts 29 US South Central podcast. And it releases every 2 weeks, not every week. And the episodes are about 12 to 15 minutes, and they're specifically focused on church planting. So this is a podcast that's specifically aimed at those planting churches. And I realize that will not be interesting to every single listener of the Wednesday Conversation, and that's fine. But what will be interesting to you is this interview that I did for that podcast recently with my friend Femi Oshinui, who is leader of a church in Lagos, Nigeria, and a wonderful brother in Christ, and a ferocious gospel leader on the continent of Africa. I've had the privilege this year of spending some time in Africa, and the Lord's really given me a heart and a vision for what he's doing there. Africa is a very strategic and important place, and there's a lot happening with gospel renewal right now across the continent of Africa. And recently, we were privileged to have Pastor Femi come to Omaha and preach at Coramdale Church. And so in addition to that, I sat down with him outside the Staybridge Suites in the on 78th and Dodge, the hotel that he was staying in. We went out on the back patio and just sat down for an hour or two. And I asked him to talk to me about church leadership, about his own story and how he came to faith in Christ and was called into ministry, and about the uniquenesses of leading a church in Lagos and the influence of that city on the continent of Africa, and some of the unique perspectives he has on the church in America from his vantage point on the other side of the world. And so I want you to benefit from my interview with Femi, and also wanted you to know that if you like this kind of content, you can find more that is similar to it on the Acts 29 US South Central podcast. And we'll put a link to that podcast in the show notes for this in case you want to be able to go find that. But if you just search for that in whatever your podcast engine is, I'm sure you'll find it easily. So here now is my conversation with Femi. Talk a little bit about your calling. How did God call you to ministry? How did he call you to plant the church you're planting in Lagos?
Okay. So I won't give you the 36-hour version. I'll give you the 3-4-minute version. My parents, I was born in Lagos. I was second of two children. My parents at the time were involved in a conservative African Anglican church, and that's where their parents were. And by that I mean it's form of religion, but at the same time with African conservatism. So loads of, you know, the cathedral and all of those things, but at the same time my grandfathers were both polygamists and they were men of good standing in the church. So, you know, it was void of any kind of gospel. And I think my parents got tired of that, and so eventually they got involved with a Pentecostal house church movement. Which had good things about it, but it was also, it had a lot of legalism because it was geared towards perfectionism, because also it was also tied to, there was a lot of excitement in the 70s and the 80s about the return of Jesus Christ, you know, the Hal Lindsey books and all of those things. So they had a different interpretation of how the end times will come. But they were, on the one hand, reacting against the form of Pentecostalism that had hijacked the initial Pentecostal movement that started in Nigeria in the 70s. By the late 70s and early 80s, it was hijacked by a form called the Prosperity Gospel or the Word of Faith. So their movement didn't accept that, they rejected it, but then they moved towards perfectionism. Anyway, so that's where I grew up in. Eventually, I think I got saved in that movement at the end of my last semester in college. Between that time, I wasn't really living as a Christian. But because the the house church movement wasn't structured in terms of hierarchy. If you had a gift, immediately you were thrown into ministry. So I got saved. I had time because I just finished college. I loved the Bible. I loved the theology of the church. And so I got very involved in that, started leading the youth ministry there. And 2 years after working, for two years I worked in business, and then I moved over to the UK for postgraduate studies in engineering. Started a Bible study there, really wanted to take the theology of the movement and start to, you know, convert people to that around. But in between, after about a year of teaching, I stumbled on a guy called R.C. Sproul because I ran out of material, basically. I'd taught everything I could teach with books and all of those things. Started reading the Bible myself, then found a guy called R.C. Sproul through some guy actually also in the movement who didn't know that eventually R.C. Sproul was going to take me out of that. And so R.C. spent some time, R.C. Sproul, Ligonier Ministries, but then that then veered me off into a whole world of authors from the Reformed world. But particularly the two that were most influential in my life were D.A. Carson and Tim Keller.
What was it, by the way, about their thinking that compelled you? What were they? What was the Reformed stream? What did they have that you felt compelled by?
So even whilst I was in the movement, the people that attracted me most in that movement were the people that I felt understood the Bible so well that it held together. And so when I heard R.C. Sproul teach, I saw greater clarity and greater understanding than what I'd been exposed to. And it was the same thing for the guys that eventually I then started to embrace. D.A. Carson, for me, with his biblical theology, but also a kind of he wouldn't always go to the polarities, you know, very, very careful with the exegesis of biblical theology before you come out with your systematic theology. And so those things, it made the Bible make sense. If I would say one thing that was really good about my training in that movement was you got to know the Bible in terms of, you know, verses. I knew verses here and there, but I didn't always put them together. So once I got the biblical theology sorted out, it made that verse there, that chapter there, all of those things started to come together. And then at the same time, I think it was much more devastating in the critique of myself. At the point I was, you know, many people saw me growing up in ministry. They saw that things were really great. But when I started to embrace Reformed theology, I saw that actually my heart was really dark. I believed I was saved, but there were so many idols that were there, and I had not received that critique before. And so it wasn't just a change in theology. More importantly, it was a change, a transformation, transformative change in my life. And that affected me. It affected my wife as well. So this Bible study started to change theologically. Now, at the same time, even at the beginning, we already had myself and two other guys that were leading it. We already had a passion to see the city of Lagos change, because how could you have so many churches? We've never had more churches in Africa than we do now have. And yet the cultural, the moral climate, if you like, has been decaying. And there was a disconnect there. And we saw that disconnect had to be in the church. So we started praying for a revival. God should do a revival. But then as theology started changing, you became more specific in your prayers. And so we started praying for revival. Then we started praying for a gospel-centered revival. Then we started praying for gospel-centered churches. And then we started praying for gospel-centered leaders. And at the same time, I started reading a lot of Tim Keller and other books to see how the world was becoming more urbanized. And the way you change that is to have gospel-centered churches in those cities that are contextualized to the urban context. And so here's me leading a Bible study, passionate about theology, praying for gospel-centered renewal in a city that now I started to love. And, you know, the call just came very strongly to go and plant a church. And so I like to think that I left Lagos hating the city because it was just exploding around me. But by this time, I had a gospel love towards it, a gospel-centered love. And I look at that through John 3:16, that God loved the world, that he gave his only begotten Son. Whoever believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. So in other words, there was nothing to love about us because we were worldly. But God's love came and changed both our destiny and our lives so that we would not perish. And so the gospel-centered love towards a city like Lagos is not to love it because it's lovable. It's to love it in a way to change it from where it is to something that would honor God. And so that became our passion, to go plant a church. My wife and I moved back after almost 7.5 years in the UK, moved back in 2015, settled down for 9 months there. For the whole 2016, we gathered a core group of people and just started to envision what a gospel-centered urban church would look like that wanted to catalyze a gospel-centered movement that would renew the city of Lagos. And then 2017, in January, we launched City Church. So it's been going 2 years now.
Yeah. I want to ask you to talk a little bit about the importance of theology in church planting. Because you obviously are planting in a context that's rife with Christianity, but a certain version and form of it. Prosperity gospel is very dominant. And so, and your own story testifies to the importance of clear, reformed, gospel-driven theology. Mm-hmm. I talk to a lot of church planters or aspiring church planters who have the entrepreneurial skill and the leadership skill. They don't feel like theology is really that important. They just want to get out and do their thing and start a church. Why is theology critical to planting a healthy church? Mm-hmm.
Well, that's something that's passionate to my heart, because actually I do have a background in business. So when I worked in Lagos for a few years, I was involved with a church, with a startup company. And so, you know, I really enjoyed the whole entrepreneurship dynamics. My wife said I'll be in business if I wasn't planting a church, and that is true. And so I like the creative energy that brings, the innovation, all of those things. And I wouldn't belittle all that. However, I would say this, that if you haven't got your theology sorted straight, and for me it's Reformed theology, but any other form of healthy theology, eventually you would default to pragmatism, which is a form of theology in its own right. I met a guy who showed me his church plant plan a few years back when we got to Lagos, and it was very, very similar to an undiscerning eye to what we wanted to achieve. But having spoken with him for about an hour and a half, I knew what was missing, and that was that his theology wasn't sorted out. He had read a few books about renewal dynamics, and he was so eager to want to start. And I knew this will eventually descend into something else. Why? Because he wasn't well prepared theologically. Because at the end of the day, we're not just trying to start something, you know, start another startup. We're actually trying with church plants to engage in the mission of God. And so it's a spiritual endeavor. And so the foundation of it has to be theological. I'm not talking about crusty theology. I'm talking about theology, like I said, in my own testimony, theology that ultimately transforms our lives. Because, like I thought with that guy, you may be able to last for 2 months, you know, and after a while, what's going to happen is you would have to start depending more on your creativity rather than the theology that changes people's lives. It's that the Spirit uses. And Paul says that I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it's the power of God unto salvation. What that means is that the Spirit of God uses the gospel. That is the power of God manifested. And so whatever structures we want to create, whatever creative leadership structures we want to create, we don't want to have the crucial vacuum at the middle where the power is, because we lack, you know, a right theological foundations. Eventually you're going to have people, you're going to have to bury people. Mm. You're going to have, like we had very early on, a family who lost their two babies in the space of a year. The first was like 35 weeks, the third was 34 weeks. How do you deal with that? One of the guys said, "What's a message that I preached on suffering?" The father said, "A message that I preached on suffering." They had that over and over and over again. At that point, your creativity is not going to work. And so it's your theology robust enough to be able to handle those situations in suffering? Or is it, are you just going to say, "Hey, don't worry, the Lord will sort you out. Now let's go on with the mission." That's the kind of advice that someone with a lot of talent, with a lot of gifting, but without the right theology, that's the kind of thing he can say. And eventually that becomes destructive. People start to hurt in the church. And it actually for many leaders, it actually leads to other kinds of things. Some people eventually sleep with people that are not their wives. Some people eventually accumulate too much power to themselves. You know, so many things. So I would say that's the danger of not having your theology sorted right.
Let's talk about the idea of being missional, which to a lot of people, I think, means I want to reach non-Christians in post-Christian Western culture. I want to connect with the person who is skeptical of the church. But you're also ministering in a context where there are a lot of nominal Christians, mm-hmm. as am I. Talk about what it means to see the mission, not just as reaching non-Christians, but also reaching people who might profess to be Christians, people who might be disconnected from the church. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to have that kind of a, to preach the gospel to that swath of people versus just a narrow band mm-hmm. of that?
I think we have to be careful. So I really do believe in contextualization done well. And I, for me, that means trying to minister to the people who are in front of you, not the people that you've read in a book and you're fascinated about. So you don't want to start quoting French philosophers if you're ministering in Dallas, for instance. You're not in New York. So for us, the context is we are in Christendom. And I like the way some people think about it, that in most parts of the world, you're either in pre-Christian world, Christendom, or post-Christian. Now, a lot of places are post-Christian or in Christendom. And what that means, at least for us, is we identify three people that we wanted to be missional with. The smallest category would be people that were explicitly non-Christians. That's just a demographic reality. The largest category would be people who would profess to be Christians, who would be vibrant, but not would not have vitality. Because vibrancy doesn't equate to vitality. And then we would have people who are Christians, but let's call them dormant Christians. That is, they need to be woken up, as Tim Keller would say, because even though they'll be genuine Christians, they're not actively serving. They're not actually engaging in the mission of God. They need to be renewed. And so for us, trying to contextualize the gospel really means that our largest category is people who are not Christians, but who think they're Christians. And so I would say that if you want to be missional, you have to be thinking, really, what's the context in front of you? So if you find yourself in that context, what you have to deal with, I think, both in your preaching, but also in how you design your ministry, is you have to be skillful in talking to, and there are different forms of nominalism, but you have to be skillful in trying to deconstruct these people who think they're Christian. You have to think about the forms, the categories they think in, and try to then present the reality of the gospel. So I'll just say, for guys who are trying to plant churches, trying to be missional, think about the context that is in front of you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wednesday Conversation. We will feature part two of my conversation with Femi next time around, so be sure to listen again next week, and we'll see you then for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.